This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 7:06 in the evening and you are with Lynn and Kelvin on the Evening Edition. So we wanted to take a look at another big headline that has really been going on over the last month or so and is, if anything, worsening, which is a really deeply frightening thing. And that is, of course, the Australia bushfires. And so we're going to be talking about a couple of things. Firstly, some brief updates on what's been going on. And then also, I think, taking a look at the offer that's come from our side, to help out. And a question also of whether we are ready for something like this to potentially happen here.
So just looking at the bushfires in Australia, you know, they are far from new in the country. They occur all year round in different regions of Australia. But over the years, the fires have lasted longer and longer. And this time around, it's been especially severe. It's estimated that 15 million acres have been burnt. That's about twice the size of Belgium.
So here is the BBC's Phil Mercer describing the situation in New South Wales, which has been the hardest hit in the fires.
What's happened in southern New South Wales, or what happened on New Year's Eve, really came at the worst possible time. This is a very popular tourist destination. Many families, residents, retirees and other people would have been down on the coastline enjoying Christmas and New Year's festivities. And that's why the evacuation is so chaotic and complicated. There are so many people in the fire zone. Some don't want to leave. Others are trying to leave but can't because of various road closures. Adding to this sense of unease and unpredictability is the fact that there are shortages of food, fuel and water, and also internet and phone services have gone down. So that's adding to this great sense of unease as thousands of people continue to pour out of that region.
So the fires have been raging for months now. They began back in late July. They were mostly started by natural causes, like a lightning strike in forests that were affected by drought. And this, coupled with the fact that Australia is facing one of its worst droughts in decades, means that the fire has become incredibly difficult to eliminate. Here is CBS News meteorologist and climate specialist Jeff Berardelli talking about how climate change plays a part in the worsening fires.
First of all, there's a study out that climate change is making this natural pattern worse and more extreme. But in addition to that, we're seeing gradual trends take place over the past century or so, and a couple of those are this. So first of all, the number of extreme heat days. Take a look at this. In 1910, 1920, almost zero extreme heat days, and now we're up to an average of around 15. That really dries out the soil. You can imagine the amount of heat. In addition, the gradual increase in temperature, both of the ocean and also of the atmosphere, has gone up. In fact, the air has gone up around 3 degrees Fahrenheit over 100 years. Again, that gradually dries out the brush. Lastly, fire danger in the southeast corner, especially of Australia. Look at how much it's gone up over the past four decades or so. So this is a situation where climate change is kind of the background. When you have a natural pattern that's causing extreme fire danger, climate change spikes it, it enhances it, it turns extreme fire danger into catastrophic fire danger.
Now, Australia is also just entering its summer season and temperatures usually peak in January and February. So the country is bracing for the fires to continue. And in terms of damage, 24 deaths have been reported, including several volunteer firefighters. More people are missing and 1,300 homes have been destroyed in New South Wales alone.
Yeah, so that's the human cost. And in terms of biodiversity, nearly 500 million animals have been killed. About 80,000 koalas, which is a third of the population in New South Wales, have perished. And, you know, through all of this, it's worth saying that there's been a lot of criticism about how Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison has been handling it. Because if you remember, he was condemned for taking his family on a holiday to Hawaii during the bushfire.
Now, back in December, the Morning Run spoke to Dr. Imran Ahmad, Honorary Associate Professor, Fenner School of Environment and Society at Australian National University, about the attitudes of the current Australian administration towards climate change.
I think it's their large political constituency as well. They have members that are ideologically driven against climate change. So that also influences their policies on climate change. For instance, their coalition government, the deputy prime minister, said that climate change is, I don't exactly remember the statement, but he said that climate change is for latte-drinking lefties or something like that. He made this statement. And so there is that thinking within certain quarters that climate change is probably a leftist issue or probably a green issue. Although the fact is that scientists are now unanimous and there is a consistent view in peer-reviewed scientific literature that climate change is happening at a very alarming pace, and governments, now people are calling for climate, using the term climate emergency. Guardian, in fact, newspaper, has started using climate emergency instead of climate change.
So that was Dr. Imran Ahmad. You can listen to the whole interview by searching the title Australian Wildfires, A Climate Crisis with No Political Solution, either on Spotify or on our app. So I think that this has been one of those stories where it is really, really easy to feel helpless.
Yeah.
Because the numbers are shocking and
It's not a scale you can imagine because it's in, you know, the half of a billion, right?
The animals twice the size of Belgium.
Yeah.
That's the size of the fire. So, you know, it's a little bit difficult to comprehend. And I think, like we said, there are specific challenges to do with what's going on in Australia specifically, you know, with where it is geographically, with what it is in terms of climate. So, I think that just had us thinking what this means in some ways for a country like us to offer help, because we have actually done exactly that. Deputy Prime Minister Dr. Wan Aziza Wan Ismail basically said, hey, we're ready to deploy personnel and assets to help put out the fires and to support rescue operations in Australia.
Which is interesting to think about, right? Because, you know, we are coming from a slightly different context, slightly different climate, where some of the main issues we're dealing with now, you know, when it's a drought, we have water shortages, but we also, towards the end of the year, the East Coast usually faces heavy flooding. And that's something that I guess we're slowly getting better at dealing with.
Yes, but what if we get better at dealing with it at a time when everything changes? Because I think that's what we're seeing in countries around the world, right? In most of kind of these big forest fire catastrophes that we've seen, the actual action isn't new.
Yeah.
The fact that either Australia faces forest fires or that in Brazil it's not uncommon for people to clear land the same way that takes place in our region as well by starting fires.
Mm-hmm.
None of these actions are new in and of themselves. What's new are the circumstances surrounding that. What's new is climate change, right? And so I wonder whether for us, whether we are ready to cope with that, whether for us, whether we have actually given the potential changing landscape any thought. And because of that, we wanted to talk about our preparedness when it comes to dealing with the potential fallout of climate change. And to do that with us, we're going to be speaking after this with Alizan Mahdi, who's the Senior Fellow at the Institute of Strategic and International Studies Malaysia. That's going to be coming your way after this. If you have any thoughts about what's going on in Australia with the bushfires there, if you would like to weigh in on how Malaysia should be more prepared for the effects of climate change, call us. That number is 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio.
BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
It is 7:15 in the evening with Lynn and Kelvin, and today we are talking about the bushfire crisis that's happening in Australia and how that's being really in many ways spurred by climate change. And we've, as a country, offered our help, but that got us thinking whether or not we're actually ready, not just to help the government in Australia, but also whether we have thought about the effects of climate change here in our country, whether we've put any policies or plans in place to deal with that. So to understand this a little bit more, on the line with us is Alizan Mahdi, Senior Fellow at the Institute of Strategic and International Studies Malaysia. Alizan, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
So firstly, what do you think are the key impacts that Malaysia should be looking out for in terms of how climate change will affect us?
Well, let me first begin by saying, as you can see, climate change impacts are happening now. I think for a long time we've been thinking that climate change impacts are happening in the future. But now, it's just, as you've covered, there's the bushfires in Australia, and even a UN Special Rapporteur on Disaster Risk Reduction mentioned that climate-related disasters are happening at the rate of once every week across the world. So I think that's the key thing now, what we call the climate crisis that is happening now. And of course, we've seen that in Malaysia as well. Only at the back end of last year, we had floods that displaced about more than 15,000 people, at least in Kelantan and Terengganu. And in 2014, it was about 200,000 people. And the thing with climate change is it's a bit of a double whammy, really, because it brings wet seasons becomes wetter, dry seasons become drier. So, of course, in Malaysia, just last year, we also faced haze as well due to the drier climate. So it's really a double whammy. But on top of that, I think some of the things that perhaps we don't keep our eye on is the kind of systemic impacts of climate change. For example, to our food security, you know, droughts will bring lesser yield, for example, to our rice fields. In the Muda Agriculture Development Authority, it is expected to reduce by up to 30%. And then, of course, there's also some things that we don't really know yet. But, for example, climate change can affect public health in terms of there may be a rise in dengue cases. We also don't really know well what the impact of climate change does to our flora and fauna. So there are many things that climate change can impact because it's a very systemic systemic challenge, and I think we have to really understand it better in the context of Malaysia.
So what I'm getting from what you've said, it's also the fact that climate change will likely also hit vulnerable communities the hardest. You're talking about food security. That means food prices are likely going to go up. You're talking about healthcare, and that's likely going to further impact the now already clogged up public health service that we have.
That's right. I mean, the most vulnerable communities are the ones likely to be affected the most by climate change. I mean, when you consider, for example, just think about the floods in Kelantan and Terengganu. As I mentioned, there was bad floods in 2014 and now in 2019. Now, I don't know, but they're likely to be the same communities that are suffering from this. And they're likely to be very vulnerable communities that when it happens, perhaps there are also always interventions that are temporary. They go to relief centers. But again, it will occur again and again and more frequent in the future.
So are we right now then taking steps as a country to try to deal with this, to try to preempt these effects? Because, you know, you said something really startling earlier, that statistic about how there is a climate change related disaster happening every week somewhere in the world. And so we are clearly not exempt from that. And perhaps we don't feel it as much right now, but that doesn't mean that we won't in the future.
That's right. Perhaps Malaysia is not the most vulnerable in terms of climate change in the world, but we do face those effects, as I mentioned, from flooding, from haze, and also some issues that if we're not careful, we can really suffer from, for example, food security. So yes, we haven't really kept our eye on it, I would say, and that is a danger. In terms of policy, I think there has been a welcome development recently that we focus more on what we call climate change adaptation. Previously, the focus was more on climate change mitigation, and this is essentially reducing greenhouse gases through renewable energy. But recently, we've been speaking more and more about climate change adaptation, which really is trying to preempt, as you say, some of these challenges. So there has been that focus. But as usual, the implementation, I feel, is still unclear. And I do believe that, I really feel that we haven't really elevated it as a policy priority. For example, within the national budget, it's still not a significant amount. So the focus has been there towards climate change adaptation, but we are yet to clearly see how we're going to implement it.
Do you think there's enough political will to deal with something as serious as this?
Well, I hope so, because I hope it won't be too late. And this is the challenge that we have, especially in the current political climate, whether issues of climate change is a policy priority. But again, with the so-called new Malaysia, I hope it is the political will comes from the push from the society at large as well. So I hope Malaysia at large have woken up to the what the world is calling the climate crisis. So, but at the moment, as you know, with the political climate that we are, it doesn't seem to be on top of the priority.
So with that said then, what are some of the key areas that you want us to pay a bit more attention to that really should, I suppose if miraculously that political will comes through and we do see really big policy and implementation changes coming in, what would you like to see come from that?
When we talk about implementation, implementation largely is at the local level. So we can design, and we have designed beautiful policies at the federal level, but when we talk about implementation, it has to translate down to the district level, well, state, district, and finally the local local level. And here is where we are clearly seeing a lack of implementation, of especially when you talk about climate change adaptation. Secondly, for example, I'll just give an example of now around the world, people are talking about nature-based solutions. Mm-hmm. In Malaysia, we have mangroves, which are some of the best in terms of nature-based solutions because they access natural flood barrier systems. Yet we are still seeing mangroves being cut down, et cetera. So the local level planning has to address, especially when we talk about preempting this climate change impact.
On that note, right, we often say that everyone has to play a part against climate change. But in Malaysia, do you see specific parties carrying a greater responsibility?
Yes, climate change is a shared responsibility. Everyone needs to play a part. But when we talk about, I think largely the narrative has been previously climate change mitigation, and that's about reducing our consumption, greenhouse gases, etc. And that everyone does play a role and everyone should continue to play a role. But again, with the topic today, when we talk about adaptation, a lot of it has to be linked to planning. And as I mentioned, local planning. So in the future, I think local governments, state governments need to have the capacity to address climate change. If not, there will be direct impacts to the most vulnerable communities.
And finally, you know, there is this area, there's this kind of issue that's receiving growing attention, and that is migration that's being caused by climate change. Should we be prepared for that potential for, I suppose, an inflow of people, considering that we, like you said, are relatively insulated from that for the time being?
Yes. So, as I mentioned, Malaysia is relatively less vulnerable to climate change than our neighbours, especially. Southeast Asia is one of the most vulnerable regions in terms of climate change. So we are very lucky in that sense, but our neighbours surrounding us, Philippines, Cambodia, Vietnam, Myanmar, are some of the most vulnerable countries to climate change. And we may expect some migration from these countries. Secondly, perhaps the most vulnerable country in the world to climate change is Bangladesh, who we know there's a pattern of migration from Bangladesh to Malaysia, and that climate force migration from Bangladesh might be more common in the future. So that's something we have to look at. But also, we have to also start thinking about internally displaced persons, people within Malaysia. As I mentioned, we've seen bad flood events happening at relatively close amount of time in 2014 and 2019 in Kelantan and Terengganu. And within, it's quite likely there'll be more and more migration from within Malaysia in vulnerable communities to urban areas, for example, Kuala Lumpur. And our urban rate is already about 75%. So just imagine what it will be in the future, rapid rate of urbanization. I think for now, Department of Statistics put the figure about 22% of people already migrating because of environmental reasons, and we might that figure might go up in the future.
Alizan, thank you so much for speaking with us today.
Thank you.
That was Alizan Mahdi, Senior Fellow at the Institute of Strategic and International Studies Malaysia, talking about our preparedness for the effects of climate change. This is coming after we have offered help to Australia, which we know is stricken by the bushfire crisis that's going on. So that just had us thinking, well, it's it's great that we are offering help, but whether we are ready to actually deal with potential challenges that we're going to face in our country as well. If you have thoughts, you can call us 7733-2900. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio, BFM89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.